Welcome to the Entrepreneur's Lounge Radio Show, where we expose the myths of entrepreneurship and release the weight of it all. Real people, real issues, and real talk with expert solutions. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show as we welcome our host, Alicia Brown, the Joy Guru.
And thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Entrepreneurs Lounge radio show and podcast. Of course, I'm your host, Alicia Brown, the Joy Guru. And the mission of our show is to expose the myths of entrepreneurship and help you release the weight of it all, which means we must address the issues that hinder your success, which is why I chose to discuss seasonal depression for this episode. Could you be suffering from a case of the winter blues? As we enter the holiday season and winter months, have you noticed that you've had a change in your appetite, especially a craving for sweet or starchy foods? Have you experienced weight gain, a drop in your energy level, perhaps fatigue, even irritability, difficulty concentrating, and avoiding social situations? Now, if you answered yes to any of these, you might be experiencing seasonal affective disorder or SAD. The symptoms may directly impact your productivity and your business, so it's very important that we shed light on this topic. And if you're not personally struggling with this, I guarantee you that someone in your office or on your staff is. The fact is that seasonal affective disorder is estimated to affect 10 million Americans, and it's four times more common in women than in men. And the age for onset is estimated between 18 and 30. So today we have leading clinical psychologist, Dr. Carla Manley, who's going to provide insight on how to transform our lives and overcome anxiety, trauma, depression, and relationship issues. But first, I'd like to share the following show disclaimer.
This show, our social media accounts, and any related content offered is done in the hopes of bringing enlightenment and awareness to our listeners. They are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or mitigate in any way any disease or condition, or to promote any specific lifestyle, belief, religion, political affiliation, or other personal practice. Always seek the advice of a qualified health or clinical professional with any questions you may have. Never disregard professional help or medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have read in our content or heard on this show.
And with that being said, allow me the pleasure to introduce tonight's featured expert. Dr. Carla Marie Manley is a clinical psychologist and wellness expert who makes her home in Sonoma County, California. With a holistic body-mind-spirit approach, Dr. Manley specializes in the treatment of anxiety, depression, trauma, and relationship issues. Blending traditional psychotherapy with alternative mindfulness practices, such as yoga and meditation, Dr. Manley knows the importance of creating healthy balance, awareness, and positivity in life. And what entrepreneur doesn't need that? So please help me warmly welcome Dr. Carla Manley to our show. And Dr. Manley, how are you?
I am fabulous. How are you?
I am wonderful and fabulous as well. And of course, someone who's like the joy expert, it's always welcomed on my platform.
Thank you.
I love it. So we're talking about something that has a stigma, isn't very pleasant to people. But from your clinical perspective, what really is seasonal depression and what makes it different from just general depression?
That's such a good question. What differentiates seasonal, what we often call SAD, seasonal affective disorder, is that it is a type of major depression. And when we look at seasonal affective disorder, it's termed, actually the clinical term is major depressive disorder with seasonal pattern. And that comes from what we use in diagnose the DSM-5, which is the diagnostic manual used by mental health professionals when they're looking at diagnosing a clinical disorder, a clinical mental health disorder. So what differentiates seasonal affective disorder from your general major depression is that the diagnosis of seasonal affective disorder requires that there be a relationship between the major depressive episodes and a particular time of year. And people generally think that seasonal affective disorder only occurs in the winter, but it can also occur in the summer. So that is the key piece we look for, is do the major depressive episodes occur at a particular time of year? Now, the other key pieces that help us differentiate between occasional blues and, you know, holiday blues and that sort of thing is, do we have a full remission of symptoms after the change of seasons? So if the individual you're working with tends to feel really blue in the winter yet perks up in the springtime, or does really well throughout the year but comes summertime, the symptoms start appearing, then we notice the connection to the seasonal part, right? And so that's what we look for. The other interesting thing about seasonal affective disorder is that we want to look and see where there is at least a two-year period where the symptoms were present during the, we'll just stick with winter seasonal affective disorder, during the problematic season of winter, with a lack of depression and other symptoms in the other season. So again, we're looking for a history of, does this occur routinely with an absence of symptoms in the non-problematic season and a recurrence of the symptoms in the problematic season? The other piece for seasonal affective disorder is we have to have a historical pattern that shows that the individual has had more seasonal depressive episodes than non-seasonal major depressive episodes. So again, we want to be looking at, does the individual who's in my office or in another clinician's office, do they have a pattern of this occurring during the seasons and then dissipating and then the depression occurring again during the problematic season? And, of course, there are really interesting symptoms that are present in both winter and summer seasonal affective disorder, and those include feeling depressed nearly every day for the bulk of the day, and that is a key piece of major depression, but, again, we're looking at it at a particular time of year, a loss of interest in normally enjoyable activities, so things that you normally like to do, all of a sudden they're not interesting anymore. Difficulty concentrating, and again, these are also common symptoms with major depression, right? Feelings of guilt, worthlessness, hopelessness, and then in our daily lives, trouble with sleep, sleeping too much, not sleeping enough, waking up in the middle of the night, and certainly another key symptom is if there are any suicidal thoughts. And again, we want to be looking at these in connection with the particular season. Now, winter seasonal affective disorder tends to involve more lethargy, kind of, I don't feel really good, like doing much of anything, wanting to sleep too much, which we call hypersomnia, increased appetite, particularly cravings for carbohydrates, and a lower energy, so kind of like feeling like a sluggish bear, you know, wanting to sit on the couch. Summer seasonal affective disorder, which is less common than winter seasonal affective disorder, tends to be more prone to insomnia rather than hypersomnia, weight loss rather than weight gain, and poor appetite as opposed to an increased appetite and carb craving that we tend to see in winter seasonal affective disorder.
Wow.
So there's a lot, isn't there?
It is, but, you know, one of the things about this that's so interesting, which is why I'm so glad you're here today and we're talking about this, It's because you can take some of those symptoms and easily say it's something else. You know, even when they have some of the symptoms you mentioned, you know, people are just like, well, it's holidays, you know. I don't think I might have that problem. I have all those symptoms, but, you know, it's holidays. I'm really stressed out. You know, it might be something where, you know, in the winter you're going to school, or maybe you have seasonal unemployment due to your profession. So, you know, people will look at this and say maybe it's something else. Or on the other side of the coin, you may have people listening to this and go, ah, you know, some of the things she said, I do feel that way. I am noticing in this season I feel this way, or in this season I feel this way, and I just didn't know what it was, and I've just accepted it as normal. So it always goes to the fact of preventative care. You know, if something is off, don't just slug it off as, oh, well, you know, I'm stressed out this season, or I got a lot going on. It never hurts to go see a clinical professional and just, you know, get it checked out. If nothing's wrong with you, or you don't need any help, great. But what if there is something wrong and you can get ahead of it versus behind it?
Absolutely. And that is the part where, when we destigmatize mental health issues and simply take a step back and say, wait a second, if I was suffering from a cough every year at a certain time, or getting a rash every year at a certain time, I would seek a professional to figure out what it is. You know, am I allergic to mistletoe? What's happening here?
Right.
And so I look at it the same way with mental health. When we notice that something is, in this case, it's recurring, seasonal affective disorder will occur again at a certain time of year. And if we're able to step back and see the pattern, sometimes our loved ones notice the pattern before we do. But that's why seeing a clinical professional is sometimes really helpful, because they know the right questions to ask. They know to say to us, oh, well, you know, how are family dynamics this year? Is there something new with family dynamics? And indeed, maybe. And so that's the piece where having a discussion with somebody who's trained, and as you've so wisely said, there are definitely parts about the holidays that can be triggering for anyone. And if you're prone to depression, they can be, or anxiety, they can be more triggering, because the holidays bring up, in many cases we don't even realize, some of our oldest unconscious psychic wounds from childhood. And so they get exacerbated, and that can lead to depression. But that kind of depression is different from what we're talking about with seasonal affective disorder, where we can't really point to the cause, right? It's just this, you know, something is not right. Whereas if we can point to the cause and saying, oh, being around toxic people, or partying too much, or overspending, and so then I worry about the bills coming in after the holidays, then that wouldn't be seasonal affective disorder. That would be something that we would look at and say, wow, there are some habits and behaviors here that we can address. And that is the beauty about reaching out for support from, you know, clinical professional. They can help you figure out what the root causes are.
And that is so true. So anything we can do where we can initiate that conversation, erase the stigma. A lot of, if you're employed, if you're an employee, there's a lot of employee assistance programs where you can go confidentially, talk to someone and get some help, versus feeling like, you know, if I go, I'm going to be exposed to this. But I want to know as well, is it something, we talked about earlier that there was 10 million Americans annually affected by SAD. Is there something that certain people are more susceptible to this, or is it not? Are there certain precursors, or what is the, I guess, the precursor to actually being a sufferer? Yeah.
Okay. So research shows us that seasonal affective disorder is definitely more common in those with recurrent major depression and those with bipolar disorders. So, again, if you have a history of recurrent major depression or bipolar disorder, you are more prone to seasonal affective disorder. So when we look at this, it's important to be aware of the connection in a really non-judgmental way. Just like if you have, you know, a physical disorder, right, where you tend to maybe sprain your ankle a lot because you have weak leg muscles, right? It's the part where you look at it non-judgmentally and say, wait, this is just part of who I am. And we also know that that research does show that younger individuals are at higher risk for winter seasonal affective disorder. So it's really important when we know that if there's somebody who is a friend or a loved one, and we notice a pattern that, wait a minute, this is happening every year as fall comes on, daylight savings time, you know, ends, that this loved one tends to be a little more melancholy. The beautiful part about this is that research is showing that we have alternative treatments, and again, I'm not recommending any treatment, and I loved your disclaimer, but something to talk with your mental health care provider about if you're suffering or you have a loved one suffering from seasonal affective disorder, that we do have broad-spectrum phototherapy, and that's something that's been around. We talk about them as seasonal affective disorder lights sometimes, but it's broad-spectrum light therapy. And so that is one treatment. And studies show that it is effective and sometimes not so effective. But another treatment, and again, not recommending anything, just recommending that you talk to your healthcare professional about it, is vitamin D treatment for those who are really, yes. So there is research out there done by the Union Memorial Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland, and they did a beautiful study showing that vitamin D, and again, it was administered through clinicians, people who were treated to do this, so I don't want anyone going out there and, you know, giving themselves huge doses of vitamin D, but again, it's something to talk to, right, that it was shown to be extremely effective. So again, something to talk to your healthcare provider about, or, you know, research the study and take the study. Sometimes we have to take the study to the healthcare professional and say, hey, am I a good candidate for this? What do you know about this? Because that's something that many of us forget, that in today's world, our healthcare providers sometimes need to be coached a little bit, and we need to be our own advocates in getting the treatment that we deserve and that we want. And rather than seeing doctors, physicians, anybody as being a god who knows everything, it's important for us to go in armed with a list of what our symptoms are, what what our triggers might be, maybe being around family, maybe noticing the onset is at the end of daylight savings time or autumn. And that way, the more information we give to the medical, you know, healthcare professional, the more they are able to help us track what is going on. And again, it's not about being broken. It's not about being a defective human being. It's simply about, wait a minute, this is an ailment, it's a mental health issue, and I deserve treatment.
Absolutely. And, you know, what is to me, I don't want to say scary or frightening, but I'll say what's alarming about depression is oftentimes people have went through bouts of depression and didn't even realize it. They, you know, just felt they were in a funk, or, you know, I think I'm sad over this that happened, or I think I'm, you know, sad over maybe this isn't working out, and they never realize that they're actually going through depression. And just like you gave the analogies before of different things that we don't have a stigma on, it is just terrible. You know, I look at it like maybe you have a broken arm. It would be terrible for you to sit there in pain with an untreated broken arm just because you didn't want to go to the hospital and get someone to look at it. And there were remedies, there were treatments, there were things they could do to put your arm back to normal, but instead you sat there suffering through it, and now we have further complications because it was never treated. But so many times, you know, the stigma, and sometimes, I know when I first heard about SAD, you know, I heard a person go, oh, my goodness, that's interesting, because come think of it, we had someone in the family that was always like that. Matter of fact, you know, they said their grandfather, their great-grandfather, and they just kept going back of people that every winter they were always like that. But no one really looked at it as being depressed or, oh, they're just melancholy. You know, they're you know, that one, they're a little strange. So a lot of times it's the conversations with professionals we're not having to really get to the root of these things. But there is one question I wanted to ask you about. One of the tips from your website and your blog you gave for combating depression is to socialize. But I know for some, socialization, especially during the holiday times, is really exhausting and overwhelming. So how would you advise our listeners that feel that way?
Thank you so much. It's such a great question. And what I tend to ask people to do is to look at what brings you joy, you personally. Well, there's pressure from the external world, and this, you know, also ties into the seasonal affective disorder. If we learn that we don't need to be like anyone else, that we don't need to be, and especially as entrepreneurs and employees and employers, there's a lot of pressure, a lot of pressure to perform. And so in our time off, and especially holiday seasons, you know, we're pushed to socialize a lot, know your limits.
Yes.
Respect your limits, and I really recommend that people just go inside and say, okay, I have 20 invitations on my plate for the month of December. How many feel right to me? It may be all 20. It may be 10. It may be one. And to know what is right for you, for the year you have, for the place that you are in your life right now, and then respectfully decline without apology the ones that you cannot make. It's simply to say, you know, I'm not able to attend this year. Thank you so much for inviting me. And then the ones that you can attend, show up. And if you are showing up and you find that it's exhausting for you, which I do this one a lot, and people know I'm an introvert, so I'll go to a gathering. I'll stay as long as my psyche feels comfortable because I get drained. Many of us introverts get drained when we're out a lot, and many of us give so much so that when we're out, we are still giving. And so then I'm able to go up to the host or hostess, give a quick hug, say thank you so much for having me. I need to go home and go to sleep. And that's honest. And it's who I am.
Yeah.
And people who know me, respect me, and know that encouraging me to stay is not going to do much good and that it's also disrespectful because I'm not leaving out of disrespect for anyone. I'm leaving out of respect for myself. And so if we encourage people, and there are certain people, and that's a big difference between introverts and extroverts, is that an extrovert gets fed by socializing. They feel better. Yeah. They get energy. Whereas somebody who's more on the introvert end will get drained. And so for them, staying at a party a half hour, an hour, 45 minutes, that might be all they have. And so they can show up and do that and unapologetically go home and read a book, watch a movie, you know, do whatever it is you need to do. And so by replenishing that internal sense of what I call joy, our internal sense of what is right for us, then we don't get exhausted as much and we're able to go out and be that amazing entrepreneur and that amazing boss and that amazing employer. Because if we don't, we can tend to really get mired in depression.
Yes. And I didn't notice that, I would say, until like maybe last year. Because a lot of times, especially newer entrepreneurs, the concept of hustle and grind. And I remember the first show we had this year talked about the hustle does not have to be a grind. And when we really differentiate between hustling and grind, my God, why would you want something to be a grind? You're pulverizing something. But we get, you know, these labels and what other people expect. And I just had to get to that place where it was like, you know, that may be what you consider the norm, but for me, it doesn't work for me. It's draining. It's exhausting. So I had to say, this is why I end this. So, you know, I often see it, and it's like holiday time comes. Well, yes, you know, as an entrepreneur or as a business owner, you need to go this. For me, that's his office. I have other entrepreneurs, they love it. They want to attend every social function, every this. And I'm like, awesome. I'm so happy for them. I'm not coming. But the ones that I go to, I really enjoy myself because I don't feel like I'm under that pressure cooker, and I am an introvert. So, yeah, it's just the balance between each individual and what's, you know, something they like. If you're an introvert, that's his offering. If you're an extrovert, that may be ideal. And I have to share with our listeners, in your blog post titled Embracing Your Life Journey, the Key to Self-Compassion, I just love this example you gave that was so related. You said, and I quote, when you feel as though your boundaries are not being respected, speak your truth with compassion. For example, if someone in your life ties you up too long or ties you up with long, negative phone calls, you might say, I feel really tired right now, and I'm ready to get off the phone. I'll be free to talk again this weekend for a half hour. The stronger your boundaries become, the stronger you'll feel inside. And I remember when I read that, I'm like, that's ingenious, because of the fact that not only did you say you were truthful, you said, you know, I'm really tired right now and I'm ready to get off the phone. Then you gave them a time when you would be free, but then you specified a certain time range. So you truly respected your boundaries and you effectively communicated to that person what your boundaries were and what was acceptable. But some may hear that and say, that's being selfish or rude. So, Dr. Manley, how would you reply to them as far as this concept and this example here about respecting your boundaries by speaking your truth with compassion?
I just love the example you brought up, and I think it's so important when we come to really work with our boundaries, right? And we really become aware of what our boundaries are. And definitely, people in our life, as we create stronger, clearer boundaries, if people are used to steamrolling us or wanting their way, they will definitely, you know, or often think, oh, she's being rude. And standing up for what is it right for you, as long as it's done with compassion and respect, is never rude. In fact, I really believe that the person who's pushing you to do something for them that is not right for you, they are actually the one being rude. And so that's the part, yes, and that's the piece where if we take it to a party, right, or a phone call, and somebody's saying, no, I want you to stay. I want you to have one more drink. Or, no, I want you to have a five-hour conversation with me. And they're saying, but wait a second. And they're saying, no, you're being rude. Well, actually, the person on the other end is simply not respecting your boundaries because they are not getting their needs met the way they're used to getting their needs met. And they're often used to that kind of person is often unconsciously, sometimes consciously, so used to bullying in order, bullying or complaining or whatever it is to get their needs met, that when a person stands up with firm and gentle boundaries, it's very confusing for them. It's very disorienting. And they want it back the way it was, where they could push you into getting whatever they wanted. So as we learn to know what our boundaries are and then to gently and gracefully stand in our truth, we become role models for people who might not be used to that.
So true. And I feel like you must have tapped my phone conversation from earlier because we were having this conversation. And, you know, I was telling this friend, I said, you know, for so long, I have been the peacekeeper. And I believe the world needs peacekeepers. So I'm not saying you shouldn't be a peacemaker or anything like that. But, you know, you're used to being the one that, although you have good intentions, I feel like you really enable the wrong type of people. So a lot of times peacemakers will get right in the relationship with someone who is that stern, forceful, almost bullying type of behavior. And what I had to learn in certain relationships is, you know what? a lot of times you have the exact same experiences. You may have went through the same trauma or past abuse, but it's just a manifestation. So you almost have this codependency relationship where they know, and sometimes it is subconscious, other times it is very conscious, but they know how to push buttons. They know how to manipulate the situation. So they know how to get certain reactions from you, and you find yourself always trying to do this and always trying to keep things happy. And oftentimes, if you really look at it, you're in a bullying situation, but you don't want to be rude. You don't want them to think this. And at some point, you just have to let go of that. And again, clearly with compassion, stating your boundaries, and being firm in it, not just stating it, but actually walking that out and showing this is what I require, this is what I need, and this is how, you know, this is what I need from this relationship. And then you give them that choice to either comply or not to comply, but at the same time, you respect and love and care for yourself.
Absolutely, and so beautifully said, because as we, you know, move forward on our journey of learning about ourselves and what our boundaries are, we will often, and here's the beautiful piece for listeners to know, you will often get pushback from people who are used to using you as a doormat. But
yes,
once they realize, and depending upon the person, once they realize that your new boundaries are there to stay, then they will eventually stop pestering you most of the time, right? But and sometimes they will test you, and sometimes, but you know, the more that you hold true to your boundaries, people will generally learn and say, not even going to bother pestering her. I'll have to go look for another victim.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that you shared in your book. So I want our audience to know that you are also, in addition to being a leading clinical psychologist, you're also an author of two books where you're focusing on joy. So, you know, you can present the scientific part, but you also write in an engaging, thought-provoking way. So in one of your books, Joy from Fear, you talk about how some of us have quiet thoughts of we're not good enough, or sometimes we're suffering from anxiety, our feelings of being stuck, or depression. So one of the things you say in that book is that in order to move forward on our journey, we must listen to our instinct and our inner voice. And you advise that your inner voice knows a great deal about you and your needs. So how can we learn to trust and then hear our inner voice, especially when it's sending us alarms that something is wrong?
Another beautiful question. And the way I tend to look at the inner voice, because if we get to know, in the book Joy from Fear, I introduce the concept of destructive fear, which is not rational fear. It's not fear of the dog that might bite you, that's, you know, known for being an aggressive dog. This is the fear of getting it wrong, of not being enough, about not listening to what is right for you, about being pressured. And destructive fear is great at convincing us that we are weak, that we are inferior, that we are not perfect, when indeed we might have imperfections, but we're still, you know, perfectly beautiful human beings. And so destructive fear is, here's how you tell, it is loud, it is noisy, it is insistent, it is negative, it is focused on making you stuck. Constructive fear, which is the other side of fear, is gentle, it's soft, it's affirming, it rings true when you quiet the chatter of the mind. And so how we learn to differentiate between the two is to start having the conversation with fear, with the self. And again, here's the hard part about learning to listen, is that softer voice in our busy, chaotic world is often overshadowed by the loud, insistent voice of negativity. And here's a good example. You're applying for a job. you know, or, you know, you want to go up another level. And there's a voice that says, you shouldn't do that. Mm-mm. You don't have the education. You're not a right fit. You're too this, you're too that. You know, you just stay where you are. You know, stay with that job. And there's another voice that says, this is the next step for you. Just apply. Everything's going to be fine. If you don't get it, it means it wasn't right for you. And another level will come. Something else will come. So again, there's the difference. And so as we learn to sit with ourselves, which is, you know, a really important thing for all of us, both introverts and extroverts, is learn to sit in silence a couple times a day, whether it's walking or journaling, or for me, you know, often, you know, while I'm washing dishes or, you know, doing a household task, that'll be my quiet time. And there's so much that comes up from the psyche that will be informative for us. Because the psyche wants us to succeed. Constructive fear, transformational fear, which is the action behind the fear that lets us move forward, it wants us to be our best selves. So once we learn that it's okay just to start having an internal conversation, or we can also do the conversation with a loved one, you know, a partner, a best friend who gets the concept. And that's why so many times people think the only way to go is to have, you know, a psychologist or a therapist. Nothing against my profession. I love my profession. But it's one of the reasons I wrote Joy from Fear, is so that people who can't access psychotherapy, maybe they can't afford it, maybe they're in a remote area, maybe the only time they have free is 10 o'clock at night after a long day and juggling everything. So it is a self-paced journey into learning to have a dialogue with yourself about where you are stuck and what's holding you back so that you can find your inner joy. And it's also a book, you know, talking about being an entrepreneur that a group of entrepreneurs can use. You know, get one copy and circulate it and have a group around it, because what you'll find is as you become more in touch with the voices of destructive fear and how they rule you, because then that affects your work life and your employees or your employer. As we learn to make friends with fear and use it as a guide, we become more joyful and we radiate a sense of joy that is always with us. It just gets clouded over by life. And then we are our best employee. We are our best entrepreneur. We are not held back, but instead we're free. And so that is the piece to me that is so important in the work that I do, is helping people find out the destructive fear that's holding them back. Make friends with it. Don't run from it. Use its lessons, because on the opposite side of it is the positive voice that is going to tell you how amazing you are, how worthy you are, how blessed you are, and how, and I believe that that is where, you know, tying it back into depression and then anxiety, I think that is where so much of our depression and anxiety comes from, as we get stuck not knowing that it is something as simple as destructive fear at work, that we are not broken.
Yes. I love it. I was going to say, you hit the nail on the head. you really did. I it's like, if I didn't know any better, she bugged my phone, and she's been listening prior to this show, because this is another conversation same friend and I were having, the beauty of silence. And actually, I journaled about that today, because I feel that, you know, in our society, everything's so fast-paced. We are looking at this season, so a lot of times, you know, activity is high. You know, even just celebrating the holidays, you have family and loved one maybe that are coming in, or you're out rushing shopping or what have you. But one of the things, especially for entrepreneurs, silence is golden. That's when you get some of your most ingenious ideas. You get clarity. And as CEO, as an entrepreneur, you always have to be forecasting. You always have to be looking at what everyone else doesn't see and plan accordingly. So I think, and that's true in other areas for everyone, but it's just, you know, we are so over inundated with messages. You know, that same friend was talking about, they came off social media for a while, and they're doing that now because they want to shift their mindset social media for them was a huge distraction. The messages they were getting, how they were viewing other people's progress and comparing themselves, it was just a whole mix of nothing but distraction. So they made the personal decision to come away from social media. And we really think about it for our listeners, if you just analyze yourself, there's something in the noise of things where you're distracted. So sometimes we just need that silence, that peace. People do it, you know, I would say temporarily, maybe when they go on a vacation, they get out their environment, they have new sights, they have new things they enjoy. But we can never substitute that for maybe just some meditation time in the morning, or if you take a certain amount of time each day to journal, or just sometimes some people do in the shower, where they just have conversations, you know, with God, or they just think and reflect on things before they start their day. And if we don't have that certain measure of silence, it really has a negative impact on us and the things that we're doing in life.
I agree with you so strongly, because our world, as you said, our world is a busy, busy, hyper-busy world. And for many
yes.
of my clients, I find that they're afraid of silence. And so I really want to speak to that. They're afraid of not being busy. As one of my clients so poignantly said, I wouldn't know what to do without my anxiety.
Ooh.
And yes, isn't that profound? And I believe it's very true for many people. They don't know what
yes.
to do without their depression, without their anxiety, without their fear. And that's why the complement of constructive fear is so important, that we know that
mm-hmm.
it's okay. We can take away the anxiety, and in its place, we can put breath work. We can put just sitting and noticing. We can put in feelings. We can put in images of, you know, our higher power or whatever speaks to us. Or we can simply just be, and just noticing, again, that's the power of breath work, that you can learn that you don't have to have anxious thoughts. You don't have to have depressive thoughts. You can actually just sit and be. And I heard the other day somebody say, depression wouldn't exist without resentment and anger.
Ooh.
And isn't that, now of course I'm not speaking, you know, speaking clinically on this, but more as a human being, because definitely some people need medication in order to get to a place where they can even think about, you know, doing things that are more productive, right, with their day
right.
than, you know, sitting in bed and hiding under the covers, which sometimes happens.
Uh-huh.
But the idea that if we learn to be present and just not judging our future,
uh-huh.
worrying about the future, or judging the past, worrying about the past, then we sit in a place of pure opportunity. And I think that's where the psyche does best. And sometimes, you know, as entrepreneurs, again, knowing that some of the silence for ourselves is so important, because, you know, the unconscious can speak to us in those quiet times,
yes.
just like it does in dreams. And then being able to work with a trusted friend or colleague and say, hey, I was thinking about this. This came to me out of the blue. What's your perspective on, you know, switching up my business this way? And what's beautiful
uh-huh.
about exchanges like that with somebody we trust is that what we're offering them and they're offering back often helps both people.
That's true.
Yes.
That is really true.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So much information you shared with us. Very thought-provoking. And as I said, that was just one book. I know you have a second book that talks about aging joyfully, which I definitely will tell, allow you to share with us in a moment. But how can our listeners follow you? Because I know on just your website, you have a lot of resources. You have different articles that they can review, things you share with NBC News, Oprah Magazine, Huffington Post, Thrive Global, and the list goes on and on. Also, where they can get your books and blogs. How can our listeners actually connect and follow you?
A couple of ways. First, my website is drcarlamanley.com, and it's drcarlamanly.com. They can see my books on the website. The books are available on Barnes & Noble, Amazon. If you are a fan of buying local, as I am, you can type in your zip code to IndieBound, which is also on the site, and you can find a local bookstore. The other thing about where you can find me, I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Dr. Carla Manley, LinkedIn, Dr. Carla Manley, and Instagram, Dr. Carla Manley, and on my website, and I really am fond of this section on my website, there are resources, so an entire page of resources, an entire page with articles under my blog, so that's a fabulous resource for people. And under my media page, there are also, you know, some wonderful links to articles, so that's fabulous. And the other piece on my website is a page called Your Journey. And what I love about this page is there are three worksheets that are completely free, and all you need to do is go on the worksheet and download worksheet number 1, 2, and 3, or just one of them. So, again, that's a really fabulous resource that I love to share with people. And so that's a little bit about how people can find some really beautiful resources on my website that don't cost a thing.
Yeah. And that's so important, because even, you know, when you were talking about earlier your books, and of course you're not disrespecting your profession, you love what you do, but there is a power in books too. And as you said earlier, going to professionals and seeking medical advice, it's important that you be armed. So sometimes if they're just getting the book, or they're going on your website and getting those free worksheets and reading the articles, it at least is thought-provoking. It allows you in the comforts of your home and space to examine yourself. And then once you review this and see, you know what, this resonates with me, this resonates with me, I'm showing some signs of that, maybe it is time for me to go to a professional and have a conversation, you're armed with that. You're not feeling like, well, I don't know enough, or I don't even know what to call it. You have some verbiage, you have some clues, some signs, some information to go in there with and have a conversation. Or you may find out that, you know, I've read this, I got some tips here, I'm going to implement this and make these changes and see how that impacts me. And if you see positive changes, you may feel like this is enough. I'm going to keep abreast of this, I'm going to, you know, shift some things around. And then if you see certain things reoccurring, then you know maybe I need to take it a step further and seek professional help. So I never disregard the power of books, especially when they're written by professionals that can give you some of those thought-provoking exercises, the science behind it. So you at least can have that conversation first with yourself. And then when you need to reach out to a professional, or even communicating, like you said, with a friend or loved one, you have something to start that dialogue.
Absolutely. And to know that when you reach out to a friend or loved one, that often people are so fearful of being a burden. And what I have found over and over again is that when we are authentically who we are and we share our pain as well as our joy in a really authentic way, that we often open the door to another person who is carrying their own pain. And they say, oh, my goodness, I am so glad you told me that. I was so concerned about you. Or the other thing they might say is, I am so glad you told me that. I don't feel alone because I struggle with that too. And so by being genuine and authentic and claiming our pain as well as our joy, we don't have to be happy 24/7. It's not natural to be joyful 365 days a year. What is natural is to notice what works for us and do more of it in a very compassionate, loving way. Notice what does not work for us, including being around toxic people, and doing less of that.
Absolutely.
And that, absolutely.
Absolutely. And I did promise, so I'm going to stay good on my promise, is that I did want you to tell them about your second book, Aging Joyfully. And well, of course, they know the website where they can get it. But tell us a little bit about that.
Aging Joyfully is my second book. And the publicist, the publisher, I love my publisher, it's Familius Publishing, and they wanted it originally to be a book for women 60 and older, and they wanted it termed as a maturation guide. And I said, oh, no, women don't want to be told to mature, and aging issues aren't just for people 60 and older. I said, in my clinical practice, I'm working with women who are 25 and terrified of aging. I said, this is a book that can speak to any woman, whether she's 25 or 85, right, or 95, that about very real issues that plague us because we live in a very youth-oriented culture. And so although it is, you know, it is geared for women in more middle years, let's say 40 and above, it is also, I've had 25 and 30 year olds read it and say, oh my goodness, I learned so much about who I am as a human being, about what I want from my journey in the here and now. And I've also learned, and this applies to every age, that age is not about external appearance. We want to make it about wrinkles and gray hair and age spots, but it's not. It is about aging joyfully, is about claiming your right to be on the planet, to be yourself, to be confident and empowered and loved and respected at every age. So for me, Aging Joyfully is a book about empowerment, about letting go of regret, letting go of blame, of things you wished you had done or didn't do, letting go of self-ageism, which is that talk that I hear, you know, a lot with my 20-something clients, my millennials are, I haven't achieved enough. I'm no longer relevant. Right. And I'm looking at them saying, my God, you're so beautiful and so full of potential. What are you talking about? You have the world ahead of you. Yes, because if we focus on chronological age, what we forget is that none of us have tomorrow guaranteed.
Yes.
None of us. Whether we're 10, 30, or 90, none of us know that we'll wake up tomorrow morning. So why not embrace today, live it fully, find your joy, because when you find your joy and access your joy, and the way to do that, as I said earlier, is do more of that which brings you joy, not in a selfish way, and do less of that which dampens your joy. And the more you do that, the more you will live a joyful life, and you will radiate joy and be a role model for every person who sees you. Whether they talk to you or not, you will be radiating a life that is being lived well.
And who doesn't want to do that? So I love that. And so I love that because I really feel that it's the problem when you don't feel like you have that type of life or you don't feel like it's accessible to you. You're not giving the world your best. And if you're not giving them your best, you're not fulfilling your purpose, the one thing that you were created for. So that is so pivotal, especially when we're just talking about the subject of depression. That is just so important. So, Dr. Manley, we just thank you for everything you taught us today, and especially because I want our listeners to know she is a clinical psychologist, but she truly specializes in teaching us how to transform our life and relationships by increasing self-awareness. And I know that from what you share with us thus far, they can see that. So definitely go to her website. Make sure you get the books. Go to the website and actually read the different media and resources and articles to definitely continue this conversation. But I thank you for just sharing all of this wisdom and knowledge with us so we can really have that life that we're designed to live.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as a parting thought, because you know, you mentioned about not being successful, remember, listeners, that if you find yourself comparing who you are to anybody else, that is destructive fear. You are successful every day just by having the courage to show up as a genuine human being on the planet. That is our highest success. So let go of the voice, as I call it in Joy from Fear, the voice of toxic comparison. Let yourself radiate and shine as the unique, beautiful, incredible being you are. And giving credit to Audrey Hepburn, always be a first-rate version of yourself. And that is success.
Oh, I love that. I think those are wonderful words to end on. I love it. So, other than to give them a few reminders, I'm going to stick with those words. I'm not even going to give them a motivation out. But that's beautiful. So I definitely will be re-listening to the show and make sure I actually write that down, because these are little nuggets that we can remind ourselves of every single day for that encouragement and that empowerment that we need. So, Dr. Manley, thank you so much.
It has been my pleasure. Thank you for having me. It has been a true pleasure, so thank you.
Oh, awesome. No, thank you, and have a wonderful, enjoy the rest of your day.
You as well. Take good care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, listeners, there you have it, some awesome advice. I encourage you to follow Dr. Carla Manley. And then just as a reminder, this show airs every first and third Thursday of the month. And of course, the beautiful thing about podcasting is you can actually listen in the convenience of your home. But what I would encourage you to do is please share this information with others, because depression is real and there is a stigma behind it. But no one should be suffering or going through things when there are help and resources out there. So as always, love and blessings. I encourage you to have exceeding joy. And until next time, bye-bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Entrepreneur's Lounge, where we expose the myths of entrepreneurship and release the weight of it all. Real people, real issues, and real talk with expert solutions. Make sure you stay tuned to our Facebook page and thejoyguru.net for show updates, announcements, and to learn how you can be a guest on our show.